Hello, I'd like to order french fries, a burger, and a milkshake.
This is a library.
I'd like to order french fries, a burger, and a milkshake.
Hello, I'm Ben.
And I'm Jenny.
And we're Playing Doctor. Playing Doctor is our podcast where we watch and discuss episodes of the hit BBC series Doctor Who. We started with the first episode of the 2005 series, Rose, and we go through each episode one by one and discuss that. Every now and again, we'll cross the time streams and talk about a classic episode, whether it be I think our first classic episode we did was Spearhead from Space. We've done a couple of Tom Baker episodes. And then when the series is actually making new episodes, we do a quick spoiler episode, and we mark it as a spoiler episode. So if you're not all the way caught up, then...
Spoilers.
I did check with Crystal earlier, and even though we're in a library, I've been assured that it's Vashta Narada free. So yeah. It is
we
a
did
clean
some checks
zone.
Ourselves too, just to make sure.
I do want to point out there's a kid around here with the gas mask on tonight that is thoroughly creepy. I mean, and I love it. It is the most amazing thing. I'm sitting at one of the tables off to the side over there when we were prepping for the show, and I keep hearing, "Mommy."
And the best part is I look up and he's actually got the gas mask on and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good job, kid. Good job.
Well, you actually said it's creeping you out. And I'm like, wait till you see him. I mean. So tonight we're going to talk about the fact that it took Doctor Who basically 50 years to become an overnight success. I mean, for a lot of us who started with the classic series, you know, back in the day, late night on PBS or something, we've been watching for a long time. But it never had really the fan base as what it does today.
Right.
And it's almost like overnight there was this amazing boom, explosion of Doctor Who. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember we used to get an old, in the back of Starlog magazine. I don't know if anybody remembers that. I loved it. I subscribed for years.
Nerd.
But that's me.
That was just the glossy 80s magazine.
Yeah, there's nothing like it now. But in the back, there was actual place where you could write and get catalogs. And there was a company called the Intergalactic Trading Post. And they would send, it was this Xeroxed catalog that they would send out. And they would have, you know, different patches and buttons and stuff that you can get on the internet now real easy. But I remember finding the Tom Baker TARDIS key. And I'd saved up my allowance for a couple of weeks, and I sent off, and then I'm checking the, you know, the post office probably every day after school for a week when it was, you know, that please allow 5 to 6 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks for delivery. At week four, I was going to the post office every day trying to see if it was there. Now, I mean, like you can see with the trilogy table out front there, merchandise, that's easy. Do you want a sonic screwdriver? Which one do you want? Do you want a TARDIS key? Do you want a necklace? Do you want, you know, action figures? They have it all.
And not only that, but you can make your own sonic screwdriver. You can buy the kit and mix and match the different pieces.
Right.
And get your own and not just a different doctor's.
Right. And we had nothing like that. I mean, I remember getting, my uncle took an antenna, one of the collapsible radio antennas off of a car, and he welded like a ring on top of it to make a sonic screwdriver when I was a kid. I mean, we didn't have access to all the stuff.
Now, can you still do that? You can sell those on Etsy or something, I think.
I haven't thought about that. That might be a thing. Another thing, though, that we didn't have is the internet. The word of mouth was literally word of mouth. I mean, I would go over to your house after school one day and go, oh, man, did you see this show? It was on Saturday night. It's on PBS. You got to check it out. Or, you know, you'd be talking at school or, I mean... a pen pal if you were lucky in the UK, and they would tell you about it. But it really didn't have the word of mouth that it has now.
Now, did you have a Doctor Who club after school?
No,
meet
I mean,
up with your friends and
we did
talk
not
about
like
everything.
An official thing.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend Jay and my friend Jeff, we were like the three nerdiest because not only did we like Star Trek, we also like Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things we had going for us there. It's like we had this extra level of nerdery. Because not only did we like American sci-fi, we took it to another level and went to this.
You figured you're already a nerd with the Star Trek. You're just going to go all the way.
Well, nobody's going to beat you up for being a Doctor Who fan because it would confuse them.
What's a Doctor Who? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, who's the Doctor? Doctor Who? But, no, I think, though, when the new series came back in 2005, initially in the U.S., we didn't get it. Because Sci-Fi Channel had the opportunity to get the new episodes, mm-hmm. but they passed on it. And so the Canadian Broadcasting Company, CBC or whatever, they got it. So they were getting it the same year that it was coming out on the BBC. But then Sci-Fi finally picked it up a year later in March of 2006. So like an entire year later. And so for us old school Doctor Who fans, of course, we're excited. We get to watch, Doctor Who. But that brings in a whole new generation. And I guess it kind of bubbled under the surface there for a while. Sci-fi was already starting to go through its little changes.
Now it's not sci-fi. It's S-Y-F-Y, whatever that means.
Siffy.
Yeah, Siffy.
Yeah. But... Well, it's funny, the same year that they lost the rights to the Doctor Who episodes, or they didn't really try to compete for them too hard, they...
You're in the death slot, basically. You couldn't find one since 10 at night or 3 in the morning, yeah.
Right, I mean, it was like everything that's good on sci-fi, they bounce it around to bad time slots, and then they didn't get the rights in 2009, which coincidentally was the same year that they did their name change, and... Which I think
shot themselves right in the foot directly.
Well, I mean, I think it was a good chance for them to get more wrestling because, when I think sci-fi, I think of professional wrestling.
Well, it's guys in masks, right?
It felt that maybe the quasi superhero slot that they were really needing
mm-hmm.
for a while.
Well, they were doing something right because that's actually when I first discovered Doctor Who. Well, when I first kind of caught on. Oh, and there's the our friend with that gas mask. I'm not sure if your mommy's in here.
Well, I know what works. Go to your room. See, you can stay. You can stay. You've been good. We'll find your mommy. But then when Sci-Fi lost Doctor Who, though, in 2009, the good thing about that is that it picked up on BBC America, which I always thought... Well, and Netflix, which has completely revolutionized how we watch, binge-watch TV. Now, one of the great things about Netflix that I found out today, because there's, we're in early January, mm-hmm. mid-January now, and there was the... chance that all the BBC shows were going to fall off of Netflix.
Yeah, because they go through different
negotiations.
Well,
they get a contract for X amount of time, and then, they'll renegotiate for the shows, and it just came up, the BBC shows are getting renegotiated, and there was a chance we were going to lose Doctor Who on Netflix.
Which kind of puts a cramp in our style because, we kind of rely on somebody to watch the episode and then listen to our podcast.
Yeah, and we're always encouraging people to go to Netflix, watch the episode,
yeah.
and then come listen to, that week's episode of Playing Doctor. The good thing is I was reading out just moments before the show that they've actually negotiated, and the 2005 series will remain on Netflix for another year. They're still trying to negotiate for the classic Doctor Who series, but if you don't want to wait for Netflix, because Netflix never really had a good selection of the classic stuff, Hulu, mm-hmm. on the other hand, has just about everything that's available. I mean, obviously the missing episodes are missing, period. I mean, mm-hmm. but you can go all the way back to Hartnell, and we've actually, a friend of ours, Ed has gone back, and when they recommended he start watching Doctor Who, he apparently started watching Doctor Who from the beginning and has been working his way through and is almost caught up.
Which is very ambitious, because usually when I try to get somebody to start watching Doctor Who, I tell them to start from 2005, because it's a good starting place. And then when you get to the end and you have no more episodes to watch, then you go back and work through some of the classics.
Well, and that's what a lot of our friends have done is you'll get addicted probably by about the fifth episode you watch, and then all of a sudden you're binge watching, you know, 20 episodes at a time and wondering, you know, how it went through. And another friend of ours, I guess, started with Rose last week.
Yeah, about a week ago, and he's caught up to the current episodes already.
I mean, where he's just, I guess, power watching. I mean,
he doesn't sleep. I
don't recommend that. It's not healthy. But there's about 20 days worth of Doctor Who if you don't sleep.
Yeah.
But, so we were, you know, curious, though, why, you know, this overnight boom? Because once it went to BBC America, that was around the time of the 2009 Christmas special, The Next Doctor, which was when everybody was waiting for David Tennant to leave. We knew it was going to happen, we just didn't know when it was going to happen. And all of a sudden, the Christmas special is titled The Next Doctor, which is like, oh, well, this is it.
They heavily trolled us right there. Like, everybody thought that that was going to be where they introduced The Next Doctor.
And they didn't.
It was too obvious.
They introduced the governor. And he wasn't the doctor, but he went over to AMC and killed zombies for a while.
Yeah. And got his eye poked out too, didn't he?
Well, yeah, but that's just one of the dangers of not being the doctor.
Yeah.
If he had been the doctor, he would have regenerated. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the zombies probably would have been aliens or something, too.
Right. Or actual dead who are possessed by gaslight people from another.
Yeah.
And scare the dickens out of you. See, I know who watched the episode. All right. But then there were the four specials in 2010, which they considered to be part of season four. I hated that year because I only had, even though they were longer episodes, I only got four episodes of Doctor Who in 2010. Not happy. But now BBC America had the rights, 11th hour premieres, and there's just this explosion.
It just blew up.
I mean, even to the point that they had to have Amy Pond at the beginning of the episodes do like a quick introduction of, you know, what Doctor Who is, kind of. Oh, you know, I was a little girl, then this man, blah, 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 magic box, boom, I'm traveling in time and space.
And all of us who had been watching for some time were like, oh, come on, can we just skip ahead?
I know what Doctor Who is, all right? Let's go. But, so let's, just real quick, who was your first Doctor? Does anybody remember the very first episode of Doctor Who you saw? So I'll start with you, since you've...
Pyramids of Mars, Tom Baker. It was on PBS, watching it with my dad. Scared the heck out of me. I was like, what is this show? So it's not good.
Okay. Pyramids of Mars is
okay.
That's a good one. All right, let me get you.
Tom Baker, Pyramids of Mars.
Oh,
wow.
That's awesome.
Victor the Daleks, Glove of Doctor.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's a little bit later in the game. Have you gone back and watched?
I made a promise to myself to watch at least one story of every past Doctor, including the Doctor Who movie.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
Right.
Rose, the Night Doctor.
Okay, was that, did you see it when it first came on, or did you, or was it just you found it and that's the one you started with?
I found it on YouTube.
Okay. How about you?
Oh, same thing.
Same thing? That's all right. in the back, anybody?
Rose.
Now, did you start in 2005?
Yeah.
I did.
But I think Matt Smith was on, and then I just binged for about 2 weeks.
Okay. I mean, that's one of those things that, I mean, the fourth?
Fourth Doctor, sometime late 70s or the 80s.
Yeah. Now, that's the crazy thing, though, is that my favorite Doctor is not my first Doctor. A lot of people will have whoever their first Doctor was. Like, my daughter... when we watched it on Sci-Fi, it was the Eccleston year, 2006, and my daughter was, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9, right? Well, I went out and got the box set of season 1, or series 1. Well, that's all I had for a long time. So she would sit, and anytime she'd have free time, she'd watch an episode of Doctor Who. So Chris Eccleston became her doctor, and she became like, boom, this is the doctor. And it was maybe 3 years later she saw the first Tenet episode, and we tried to catch up with those. She didn't like that skinny guy. She wanted, no, I want the real doctor back. And I thought that was funny because so many people think, you know, the real doctor, like your first doctor was...
Well, my first doctor, it's complicated. It's like a Facebook relationship. It's complicated. Because I first saw Tom Baker, and for my entire life up until around 2006 or so, I thought he was the only one. I had no idea that there was anything regeneration, that there's... I just thought he was the guy with the scarf.
You thought there was a show called Doctor Who, and Tom Baker was the guy with the scarf. And
yeah.
You probably didn't even know his name.
No, I didn't.
You just knew he was the doctor. He was Doctor Who guy.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, he was Doctor Who, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So I was flipping through Sci-Fi one day, and I caught, I guess it was Bad Wolf. It was the last... the end of the first series.
Okay.
So that was like my first episode that I really saw was Bad Wolf. So I was like, well, this looks good. I'm going to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of my starting point was
the end of
2005, but Tom Baker like always has that image in my head. Like, you know, I guess like when baby birds are born and they see the mother bird, Tom Baker is burned into my head. That's the image of the doctor.
And see, mine, I started on PBS, you know, PBS Late Night. Now, I'm not sure, I mean, are you guys from Virginia Beach area?
Yes.
Now, back in the 70s, 80s, when it was on PBS here, I'm guessing. Now, was it like a Saturday night thing or?
I think it was a weekend. I remember it being on the weekends usually, and usually either in the afternoon or late.
Okay.
But late in the evening, 11 o'clock, sometimes you would find it.
Okay, so it's one of those things that would kind of bounce.
It's usually Tom Baker episode. Sometimes they would show a John Pertwee, but usually Tom Baker.
Okay. Now, see, when I started back home, I'm from Alabama, and we had our local PBS station would show Doctor Who at 9 p.m. on Saturday nights. Now, one of the cool things is with the old Doctor Who shows that they would play on PBS, they wouldn't chop it up into the 25-minute installments on a lot of the stations that would show it. They would chop them together, so you would, instead of having four 25-minute episodes, you'd just have one 2-hour episode, or, you know, almost 2-hour episode. I loved it when Tom Baker, though, would run into extra innings. Like, if he had a 6-part serial, then it was going to be almost 3 hours, which was great, because my grandmother would let me stay up to watch Doctor Who, because it was 9 p.m., all right, go. It's a weekend, go ahead and stay up. But if it ran long, you know, we were Central Time, and so we saw Saturday Night Live at 11:30. So if Doctor Who ran over, I could run that right into, you know, and just click the channel over and catch Saturday Night Live, which I wasn't supposed to watch at the time.
Sneaky little devil.
So I would be up until like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, starting with Doctor Who and finishing up with, you know, Chevy Chase. Which probably woke
me. That explains some things.
Yeah, it may have broken something in my brain. But so my first doctor was Doctor Who. No, my first doctor was Tom Baker. But I caught him right toward the end, just before he started wrapping up everything with his series. And then I saw the regeneration. We didn't know what regeneration was. I mean, what the heck? I mean, again, no internet. If you were lucky, you'd see a reference to it in Starlog, or you might get a fanzine or something. But so the Tom Baker regeneration completely blew me away. And like now, we knew Matt Smith was leaving a year before he left. Mm-hmm. We knew Tennant was leaving months before he left. I mean, Eccleston before, I mean, that unfortunately.
Watch the BBC
shame. Yeah, whoops. But for me, though, going into the Tom Baker regeneration, it was like, holy crap, how is he going to... He fell. And then boom, and then don't worry, the moment's been prepared for. And then here's this creepy dude that's been, you know, watching them all through the episode. Comes, they merge together, boom, it's Peter Davison, and I'm in front of the TV just, what the heck just happened? What is this?
Losing your mind.
Right, so then... Much like how you say you fixed on it, because that was such a traumatic event, I locked on to Peter Davison.
Okay.
And so the fifth doctor was my favorite doctor. You know, I got like, what was it, a the bathrobe kind of thing. It was brown, mm-hmm. and I'd constantly pin celery to it, and my grandmother was always fussing about that because I've got, you know, a piece of rotting vegetable on my shirt. But, I mean, and we didn't have, you know, access to conventions where I was until we started having BamaCon down at the University of Alabama. Mm-hmm. So, again, my best friend Jay, when he turned 16, got his driver's license. The next year he was 17, and we were able to drive, you know, hour and a half down to Tuscaloosa to BamaCon. And then it was an explosion of, there's other people who know about this. Looking back, it was kind of foolish to think, yeah, they're just keeping this on the air for these three kids in the northern part of the state that we've never heard of. We'll keep this show on. They like it.
But that's an interesting thing, too, that Comic-Cons were kind of, you know, they were held in hotel convention centers and, you know, very small rooms where now Comic-Cons are huge. They're a huge business.
Right.
I mean, it's not even just comics. It's all kinds of comics and sci-fi and fantasy and everything.
Right. We heard of science fiction conventions
mm-hmm.
and Star Trek conventions. And because San Diego was going on, but it was nowhere near what it is now.
Right.
Where, you know, it's too big for the San Diego Convention Center, which is the biggest venue on the West Coast. But, I mean, we were at, like, the Sheraton in the ballroom type thing. And that was considered, ooh, you know, mm-hmm. packed up in here. And I still remember, you know, when I learned how to con surf, when you would find quiet places, like the 24-hour movie room, and crash in there. That way you didn't actually have to pay for a room. And
wow.
then you would like, I mean, you lived rough. I mean, it was like, oh, look, there's a bag of chips that they didn't finish. Okay. Because I'm saving all my money for that, you know, replica sonic screwdriver or mm-hmm. replica phaser. Nowadays, I mean, you've got the internet. What do you want? Do you want to order it from Amazon? Amazon doesn't have it, but there's the shop in London that has it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the conversion rate for the money. Oh, let me Google that. Oh, that's only $30.
And boom. There's products out there that you didn't even know existed until you go on Tumblr and you see somebody else has shared. Oh, look, here's a picture of me and my Doctor Who socks, you know. And
right,
then
I'm waiting for
those.
I'm waiting for the temporary tattoos, for the hash marks, for the silence.
You know what?
Instead
you just
of
take
actually
a Sharpie. That's all. You don't have to buy anything other than a Sharpie. And most people have those already.
Well, yeah, but you could get the tattoo. And you know, then they wash off, and that'd be cool.
Sharpies wash off, too. You just have to, like, use soap. That's the trick.
You're losing me. But, so 11th Hour comes along, the introduction of Matt Smith, and that seemed to explode in the United States.
Now, I can't remember, was he the youngest doctor?
He was, up until Matt Smith, my doctor was the youngest doctor. Peter Davison was 29 when he took over. Or when he got the part. Matt Smith was 26 when he got the part.
Okay. See, I kind of think that has a lot to do with how it latched on to a much younger and therefore broader audience, because now you've got somebody that's a little bit closer to their age, you know, and teenagers are watching and say, oh, here's the guy.
Well, see,
he's kind of cool and hyperactive, like
a
puppy.
He needs Ritalin.
He's cute like a puppy.
Yeah. Well, see, I think part of it, though, was the way that they introduced him. Because when David Tennant left, he was done. Boom. I mean, the companions were gone. You know, he does the whole, I don't want to go, but he's gone. The TARDIS explodes. There's all this changing.
The showrunner left. The producer left. Everybody left. All
the
once.
Right. Boom.
Yeah, it
so
was
you,
basically
you have
a soft reboot.
Yeah, you have a whole new staff. You have a whole new cast. And so it was a great time. If you didn't catch it in 2005 or 2006 with, you know, the new series, then Matt Smith was a great place because there was no leftover companions to carry through it. And generally when you want to bring the audience with you, you'll have that companion. Like between Eccleston and Tennant, Rose was the carryover. So she had been there from the beginning. So we follow along, and we're not completely like, oh, this is all crazy. It's all new. Who is this? Well, Rose is here to help us, right? When Matt Smith comes along, boom, it's a clean break. Everybody's new.
And there was a lot of us who were, I'm sure a lot of you agree with us, that it was a little new and scary to see this guy with the big hair and the big jaw after Tennant. It's like, oh, you're changing everything. What's going on?
Well, see, it was funny because I know when Eccleston left, the internet kind of got a little flamed up about, changing the doctor. He's only been there for a year, and there's people who are big Eccleston fans who, strangely enough, 6 months later were huge Tennant fans. But they'd never got, and I looked at it as they'd never gone through a regeneration before. Where right. I tried to remember back to that very first time I saw Tom Baker's regeneration into Peter Davison, that there was, it was such a shock to me. But then after that, it's like, okay, that's what happens. That's how they keep the show going. So when Colin Baker came along, that wasn't exactly my, it was like, okay, it's fine, because the first episode, he's got regeneration sickness. He's kind of got to get into his, used to think, okay, now we're five episodes in and he's still not my favorite doctor.
The show was at a very bad point.
And that was the thing.
It was going through some.
The BBC wanted to kill the show. Poor Colin wasn't allowed to play the Doctor.
There was a bad wrap-up for Colin Baker. I mean, and I've, to be fair to Colin Baker, though, because like I said, I spent years not liking Colin Baker because of the Sixth Doctor. And then looking back, though, finding out that everything was stacked against him. I mean,
they gave him that ridiculous costume. I mean,
and the costume that he wanted was actually closer to what Eccleston ended up getting, which was, this cool, bad A.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He was a darker
doctor. And
like
even
the
then, though,
doctor.
I mean, as one of the, I've seen the screen test for the alternate costumes, there was the blue coat instead of that rainbow clown coat that, even that looked better. I mean, if you had to get something other than. But cats, which, he liked cats, that's fine. But, so by the time I get through him, and then there's the horrible regeneration episode where he, was let go, he doesn't come back for his regeneration episode, which I think he got slighted on that. The Seventh Doctor actually doubles as his previous self to do the regeneration episode. By the time Sylvester McCoy shows up, it's a regeneration. It's no shock to me. So for the new people watching Doctor Who in 2007, six and seven,
get off your lawn.
Well, yeah, I'm like, it happens. That's how the show runs. It'll be fine. You'll like this guy.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the TV movie?
The 1996 TV movie.
That was the worst regeneration scene for me, because poor Sylvester McCoy spends the first 10 to 15 minutes trapped in that on a sick bed. They're torturing him. He's like,
yeah.
Please kill him. He's like, why don't you finish him off quickly? Stop doing that.
Well, he's the first doctor, I think, that I saw shot. I mean, that was.
Yes.
I mean, granted, I.
Which in a way is brilliant, but in another way, it's like, whoa, that. I was watching this as. And my teen's like, what the heck?
Well, what that taught me at a very early age is don't go to Los Angeles, don't go to San Francisco, stay away from the West Coast. They're killing doctors. I mean, if they can take him down, I don't have a chance out there. Which, with me owing West Coast a lot now,
yeah.
It's a little frightening. I'm just, very leery when
I
step
up. You have some regenerations left. That's all
I
can
do.
Say.
I'm only on my fourth one.
Okay,
so.
Cool. So, yeah, and the funny thing is about the TV movie is that so many people, myself included, really liked Paul McGann and felt like he could have done so well, but that was just a horrible, horrible episode.
Americanized.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was supposed to be like a backdoor pilot to start an American Doctor Who, and it could have been worse. There were a couple of... The proposal to make it, start fresh. This is Doctor Who, and he's coming in to,
It's going to be Indiana Jones in space. With
yeah.
Cybermen who are pirates. Just pirates with cyber. Oh,
and the whole thing with him being half-human, if you've seen some of the screen tests, his father was a rogue Time Lord that went to Earth to find some treasure.
Yeah.
And then he fell in
love
with a human woman.
I still try to ignore
woman.
That part, honestly. Like, it's just,
yeah.
It's silly.
I don't know if you've ever had a chance, but Nick Briggs, the guy who voices the Daleks in
yeah.
the Cybermen of the new series, has his own company called Big Finish.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they make audio plays, and Paul McGann and Colin Baker both got to do basically what their doctor should have been in these audio plays.
Well, that's what we were going to bring up, is that during, they call it the wilderness years.
Yeah.
And that's when...
It kept the show alive.
Well, we have several friends who became fans of Doctor Who during the wilderness years. They saw the TV movie and they were like, well, that wasn't great, but it was pretty interesting. Is there more? well, you've got this early AOL, you know, internet days, dial-up internet. You go on and, oh, there is Doctor Who. Oh, there's this thing called Big Finish. Oh, they've got all these original actors. They've got original writers. They've got actual directors from some of the episodes directing the audio dramas. All of a sudden, there's this huge thing. I'm talking to people who started during those years, and they're talking about how great the Sixth Doctor is. And how, you know, oh, he's the best Doctor. He's the great.
He's my favorite now because of those players.
And everybody who started during that time or who listened a lot to that love the Sixth Doctor more than I hate him back from my original watching. We have to be careful because coming up in March, there's a convention in north of Baltimore.
Yes.
Cockeysville. Called Regeneration Who. And Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy are actually going to be there. They're going to Skype in Tom Baker. Mm-hmm. And so this is this big thing. And so there's a chance that I actually bump into, you know, Colin Baker, and then it's like awkward.
Yeah, you don't want to be standing there talking about how much you didn't like the Sixth Doctor, and then you turn around and he's right there. It's like a horrible sitcom.
I think he's used to it. I think he was like, oh, Mr. Roper, I didn't know you were there. Drop the coffee pot. Yeah. But no, Big Finish definitely, I think, played a huge part in there being a Doctor Who now. They held the torch during the darkest times. Well, that the novelizations. I don't know if anyone's ever caught some of the novels from the classic Who.
I have the Doctor Who, the Dalek edition.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas Briggs.
Okay, and which? Yep, same guy. And that was, I mean, a huge thing to keep the show going. But then in, what was it, 99, they did a Red Nose. Red Nose Day is like a charity type day they have in England. And they BBC gets behind it, and they have special programming for it to help raise money and all this. Well, they commissioned a Doctor Who special. Stephen Who? The lady who was put in charge of it, her husband just happened to be a huge Doctor Who fan. Stephen Moffat.
They got Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, to play the new Doctor.
Well, one of the doctors. And we actually reviewed this on a previous episode of Playing Doctor Podcast, where we watched it and talked about it. But you end up with Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson, as the doctor. You get
Professor Slughorn.
You get Professor Slughorn, briefly. You get Hugh Grant, which I honestly think would have made a pretty good doctor.
Wasn't he actually in the running for
he
it at some point?
He wasn't at a couple of times that his name has been dropped as a potential doctor, and he's turned it down.
And I think at a certain point in his career, I think that might have actually helped the show come back, just especially for an American audience, because he was doing so many movies and he was already a name.
He's big in America.
Right. People, Americans know him. They,
and so
oh,
do the Brits.
That's a British guy I know. Okay.
I think Slughorn would have been a nice doctor for just for maybe a year. But you get, I can't remember his name, but he went on to play Great Intelligence.
Oh, Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant. He actually played one of the doctors in this episode. And then ultimately, Joanna Lumley was from Absolutely Fabulous and many other things in British television. This was brilliant casting, but then this, all of these little things, part of the premise was the doctor was going to retire, and he was getting married to his companion, and they were going to, you know, retire and go off somewhere because he'd saved the universe for the last time. Well, if you look at Curse of Fatal Death, and you also, you can find online a lot of the old Usenet posts from this guy, Stephen Moffat. I don't know what he did after that. He went on to some TV
Never
show.
Heard of him.
Yeah. But he used to post, oh, well, what if the doctor fell in love? Or what if the doctor got married? And so he has all these theories, and then he puts a lot of them in Curse
of Fatal
Death.
So basically this is fan fiction.
Right. But at the same time, we see a lot of stuff creeping into the Moffat era, starting with Matt Smith.
You mean the fan fiction part of it?
Well, not so much the fan fiction, but now you have somebody who is... You have kind of a good and bad thing, because David Tennant was a huge Doctor Who fan. I mean, he said before the main reason he went into acting was in the hopes that someday he could be on Doctor Who. And then he ends up being not only being the Doctor, but he marries the fifth Doctor's daughter, who actually played his daughter on an episode. Yeah. But so his favorite Doctor is my favorite Doctor, which makes now David Tennant my second favorite Doctor, because he's got good taste. And plus, he married my favorite Doctor's daughter, which makes Thanksgiving weird, because you've got a fanboy at the table. But anyway,
can I get your autograph?
David, please. Wait till dinner's done. But then you've got Stephen Moffat coming in, who's a huge fan from, you know, way back. So they're going to treat the show with a certain respect. But at the same time, if you've ever gone online and read really bad fan fiction, there's always that danger of them going too fanboy. Oh, and then the Daleks, which if you watch this episode in 1972, you'll remember that this happened. And so if you know that, you'll know that this guy is actually... So they haven't done that yet. Too bad.
I beg to differ.
Last time Russell T. Davies said part of the way was maybe because near the end of his run, everything just kept interconnecting. Suddenly Torchwood and Sarah Jane Adventures kept... It's like, okay, I'm writing fan fiction. Now I have to leave.
You know, and well, now Sarah Jane Adventures... we got one season of that on American TV. Sci-Fi played the first season and then dropped it, which is too bad because I've always looked at Doctor Who is something the whole family can watch. Mom and Dad can sit down and watch it. The kids can watch it. Grandma can watch it. Everybody's going to get something out of it. It's not a kids show so much as it's the whole family. You have Sarah Jane Adventures, which is definitely pushed more toward... the kids, you know, the younger, you know, teen and down. Well, and my kids loved it when they were smaller. But then
I watched them all. I suffered through many bad Slytherin costumes just because I was at that stage where I wanted to consume
everything
Doctor Who. Just everything.
And then you have the naughty older brother, Torchwood, that you make sure the kids are over at Grandma's house and then you watch it. So for the younger people in the audience, don't watch that yet. Don't. Just don't. Let your parents sleep at night.
The first season.
Yeah.
There was some pretty shaky stuff right in like the first two episodes.
Not as bad as it got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I would say the second last episode of the first season was getting into the naughty stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a full range, though, for Doctor Who. So there was something for everybody. Now, we talked about Big Finish. One of the things that I've just found out this week, there's a proposal for Big Finish to start doing audio dramas for Torchwood. And they're getting a lot of the cast back together and a lot of the crew back together for that. So for the Torchwood fans, there's a chance, you know, for more like we'd done with Expanded Universe earlier with Doctor Who. Sarah Jane, unfortunately, is, you know, it's done. Elizabeth Sladen passed away. That was really sad.
Nobody wants to recast.
No, and I think there would be, you know, torches and pitchforks at BBC headquarters if they tried to. Oh, this is the new Sarah Jane. Just don't.
I mean, they can do that with the first Doctor only because hardly anybody remembered him, but now you can't do it.
Yeah, because Sarah Jane, for a lot of us, especially those of us that started back in that era, she was the companion, and she was at the time the longest running companion. You know,
and she's generally the favorite of all time. I mean, we did a panel at Intervention Con last summer where we kind of did like a bracket challenge of who's the worst companion of all time. It just kind of narrowed it down.
Head to head.
Like we almost didn't even put Sarah Jane on the list just because there was no way possible that she was going to make it even past the first. It was like almost an insult just to put her on the to consider her
because
as
everyone
the worst.
Loves her so much.
Yeah.
I mean, and she had, I mean, and she was one of the crossover companions that she was started with a third, and then she helped us guide into the fourth Doctor when Tom Baker shows up. So, you know, the Doctor, obviously, you know, in the universe is very close to Sarah Jane. So when they aired the episode School Reunion, you know, cementing.
You get that fanboy, yeah, she's back.
Oh, I was excited. Yes. Who was the worst companion?
I think it was Mel.
Was it Mel or Adric? I think
either
that was
Mel or Adric.
It got down to Mel and Adric because there was
was a
lot
coin flip.
Of animosity between those two.
I would say Donna was the most.
Well, see, no. Here's the thing with Donna. with Donna, her
she was my favorite.
With Runaway Bride, I couldn't stand her. I was like, who is this? She's loud. She's annoying. I can't stand her. But at the end of her run, when we say goodbye to Donna, I was in tears, and I think she was like one of the best companions. I mean, the thing was, though, she didn't do the one thing that I just really don't like that they do in the new Doctor Who.
Fall in love with the Doctor.
Fall in love with the Doctor. In classic Doctor Who, when it was, you know, Hartnell, when it was Pertwee, he was an older man. You have, you know, the younger companions. You don't worry about it. Well, when Peter Davison comes along, he's 29 years old. He's got these early 20s, his companions. And they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You can't be flying around. You're not related. You're not, you know, we don't want anybody to think something improper is going on. So Peter Davison got a set of rules that there was no kissing, there was no hugging. It was like an act of Congress for him to, you know, give one of the companions a peck on the cheek to, you know, when they were leaving.
You know, the episode where they killed him off is the one where he actually touched Perry, carrying her into the TARDIS, he died.
Well, yeah. So if you touch a companion, you will die. But on the new Doctor Who...
That's because they're one of the best episodes of the classic series.
Caves of Androzani.
But I think arguably... The romance between Rose and Eccleston, actually more Tennant, kind of maybe one of the reasons why it gained so much popularity. You know, you get a lot of teenage girls who see the romance aspect of it and connect with that.
Well, see, though, and that kind of pushes me away from it, though. And that's why I love Donna so much, that she wasn't there to be his girlfriend.
They've actually brought that up in the most recent series, the Doctor realizing, yeah, he's out of that phase
right.
Now. He can't.
Well, now we have Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, and he, again, is a big fan of Classic Who. Like, I mean, I love the thing where there were, like, letters to the BBC from him, where he was saying that this one person who's president of the fan club should not be the president of the I should be the president of the fan club. So if you would just kindly remove him... That would be, you know, help us all out. And it was no problem. In his mind, it's like, this guy's a joke. I'm the biggest fan. So he's coming into this thing. I mean, he's literally been watching the show his entire life. I mean, it's funny that he is roughly the same age that Hartnell was when he took over the part. But
one of the theories that...
But he's trying to bring back that classic feel.
He was basically a fan from the beginning. He was, if you watched the, what was the documentary, Adventures in Time and Space, or Space and Time,
right.
I can't remember, but it was all about how they created the show, and they showed some little kids kind of running through the park and came up to get Hartnell's autograph. That's basically Peter Capaldi's age group. Like,
right,
he
would
have been
one
that
of
little
those
kid
kids.
Who was, oh, you're the Doctor, can I get your autograph?
Well, except they wouldn't have let any dirty Scots in London like that. They were all soccer hooligans back then. Well, in one of the later episodes with Missy, when he's raging about, there's Cybermen, take it, and she's like, never mind, just another angry Scotsman. didn't know there was a game on.
Seems legit.
And they're like, oh yeah, he's just another Scot. But yeah, he would have been that fan of the original Doctor that then grew up with the show,
mm-hmm.
which, like a lot of, you know, the kids that are here tonight at the library, they're growing up with this show. In 30, 40 years, I mean, my sons are 10, and we watched the 50th anniversary special, and they actually told me that, yeah, when we go to the 100th anniversary, if you're still alive, you can go with us. And I'm thinking, it's like, well, you're going to be, you know, 59, you know, when this comes on. So, yeah, I'll try to hang on, you know, for that 50th anniversary. I'll be 90-something at the time, but...
You'll be there.
I'll be there. Well, if I can make it. Well, because Matt Smith said the 100th is a blast. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
I mean...
And I think it was kind of a bold move on BBC's part to choose Peter Capaldi, you know, after a run of so many young and kind of cool doctors, and then they just get this cranky old guy.
Well, they seem to go younger each regeneration there for a while.
And it just
because
reset.
Eccleston was in his early 40s, and then David Tennant was in his 30s, and now Matt Smith is in his 20s, and there was actual rumors on the internet. It's like, oh, is the next doctor going to be, you know, this teen heartthrob and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, are we going to just keep getting younger? And then finally you're going to have, like, the companion is actually the babysitter, you know, with toddler doctor, and, you know, doctor babies
doctor
or something.
Doctor babies.
You know, and that would be horrible.
Yes.
So I think it was nice to kind of get this reset of, no, he can turn out to be an old guy. But going back to Curse of Fatal Death, there's that chance, and Moffat has said a couple of times, and, well, first of all, is everybody caught up with Doctor Who so I don't spoil the whole Missy thing, right? So we all know who Missy is. So Missy is the master, and that's...
Well, as far back as the Doctor's wife, they kind of danced around that.
They've hinted at it, that...
Mm-hmm.
The Time Lords can... the Cavalier. He even when he was a woman, he had the tattoo. So, and if you go back to Curse of Fatal Death, the Doctor regenerates into Joanna Lumley, who is very much a woman, back, you know, especially back then, and who from then would have made, I think, a good Doctor, mm-hmm. which I think it's kind of paving the way
mm-hmm.
for... If the next Doctor is not a woman, the next one will be. So if not the 13th or 14th, depending on if you count War mm-hmm. Doctor, I think there will be a woman Doctor.
Once he made the Master, that's basically...
It's boom.
He set the precedent.
Happen.
Yeah.
It
what
can
about
happen.
The option of bringing back Romana?
You know, here's the thing. If I had not known, and I hate so much... This is where the downside of the internet comes up, that... Just before we watched the episode, I have friends who are in the UK. Oh my God, can you believe it? Missy's the Master on Facebook. And I'm like, great. Spoiled.
Thanks.
If I had not seen that, when Missy is talking to him and he's like, oh, you know who I am. I'm the Time Lord you left behind. I'm the one that you left to die, blah, blah, blah. That would fit two Time Ladies in my mind. Either Romana... Or Susan. And I was thinking, you know, oh my God, if I'd seen this with no pre-knowledge, there's three women, Ronnie, Romana, and Susan, that I would have automatically thought it was one of those. And it would have been excellent if it had been Romana because, you know, yeah, he left her in E-Space to save them, and now she's mad.
I think it would have been great to bring back Ronnie, actually, because it's something that hasn't been brought back in the current series, you know,
one
in
of his
the modern era.
In the back?
They actually leaked some footage where Missy says, I'm the Ronnie.
Oh, nice. Just to throw people off.
Nice.
Throw people off and here send out this leak. Okay. Here's what she's saying.
Missy now R-A-N-I.
Nice.
And there were a lot of people who were like, a little, when Sarah Jane Adventures, one of the children that were her companions was named Ronnie, and everybody's like, oh, is this the return of the Ronnie? He's like, no.
Russell T. Davies said if the series had continued, one of the stories he wanted to do was called The Two Ronnies. So,
and have Ronnie come back.
He also wanted to bring Ace back.
I would love to see Ace return. Now, we've seen Joe Grant come back in the Sarah Jane Adventures. Obviously Sarah Jane came back, but I would love to see some of these classic companions, especially Ace and Perry, because I think Perry could do a lot more than what she was allowed to do in the series,
mm-hmm.
and I think Ace, I mean, anybody who's going to take
she's
a...
She's awesome.
She takes a baseball bat to a Dalek. I mean, it's... She's...
No,
yeah.
If you've seen the Night of the Doctor minisode where Moffat just goes ahead and said, you know what, Big Finish, it's canon now, and he has the Eighth Doctor name drop all his Big Finish.
All of his Big Finish companions,
like, okay, you've opened up the way now to bring in some of that stuff, too, which previously would have been totally
untouched.
Mm-hmm. Like the comic book companions, the radio...
Well,
radio
one of the things, the episode with David Tennant called The Lodger, right, is based... Yeah, well, Matt Smith, Lodger, is based on a David Tennant comic called The Lodger, which is almost the exact same storyline. And so it's, he's bringing these, or Russell T. Davies, and even Moffat, it's becoming more real, where in my circle of Star Trek friends, we've always held to the whole, you know, canon. It had to be on either TV or the movies, or it's not canon. Doctor Who is more like Star Wars in the fact that you have an expanded universe. And until something on the screen says it's not, it is. Yep.
Like, okay, if you've ever read Doctor Who magazine, people are always writing in, what's the canon now? I don't get it. How come nobody realizes Earth has been invaded several times over now? Everybody saw it on the news, but now they don't remember anymore. And Stephen Moffat says, that's the problem, you see, if you have an alien invasion become an everyday thing, then what's the point of doing this show anymore?
Right.
Nobody's, so they have to reset the continuity every once in a while, or else they can't do that type of story.
And we've seen continuity reset. I mean,
even in the original series, they had Genesis of the Daleks, where the Fourth Doctor just erases a whole bunch of Dalek history
and rewrites it basically in the new way. I mean, and a lot of people have said that that was the first battle of the Great Time War.
Yeah, Russell where, T. Davies said, yeah, as far as he's concerned, that was the first shot.
Right, and then you've also got Remembrance of the Daleks with Seventh Doctor, where he basically blows up Skaro, which,
first time.
the once of many.
Just so, take.
It's a, much like the Master, it keeps coming back. Now, I wonder how long it will be before people get tired of the Doctor killing all of the Daleks forever. Because we've seen that a couple of times, and they keep coming back.
Oh, there was just one more left, and then they just...
Well, they're like roaches. Know. I mean, unless you get all of them...
I was going to say tribbles.
No, it's roaches.
That's why they did the new series thing, where now he just erases his records from their memory, so...
They don't know who he is.
So they don't have to do, I'm killing you all anymore, it's just... They don't know they have a great enemy now, so, yeah.
But, you know, they can look him up on the TARDIS wiki.
Yeah.
It's out there, and just do some research. But, so, yeah, Doctor Who is going strong. This year, I've seen some back and forth with this previous first half of the season, where the first episode had the lowest ratings for the premiere of a Doctor. But the season the half season as a whole has averaged higher ratings than previous
seasons.
Well,
I kind of wonder if ratings are not really being measured to the way people are watching the show now.
With DVR, with
yeah.
Netflix, with...
Because I think I heard somewhere once that the ratings only count if you watched it within the first 24 hours of it actually being aired or something like that. And there's times that we don't even watch it within the first 24 hours.
Right.
You know,
it's
we've
like
got
Monday
things
or
going
Tuesday,
on.
Yeah.
So we're not counting towards the ratings. People are waiting until it comes out on Netflix. They're downloading the iTunes season pass, you know, all these different ways that you can download it. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So there's all these different ways that you can watch it. And it's not being counted
right.
towards the ratings. So I don't think it's really an accurate way to measure.
Well, Nielsen is going to start counting Netflix downloads or Netflix streams
okay.
for some of their ratings. So that should help. But I would say, though, if you want to help, because as we just found out, like I said tonight, Doctor Who is going to stay on Netflix, the new Doctor Who. Something is going on. There's several petitions out there to save it. But I've heard from a few people who are saying that that's actually the worst thing you could do, because if they get like a huge swell of, oh, 50,000 people have signed a petition, that's gonna give BBC more room to say, oh, you know how much we, yeah, bump that up a little. Take, you know, we're asking for more. Netflix only has a small pot of money.
But then what that will do is drive people to other means to watch it.
Right.
Plugins for Google Chrome, so you can watch it directly from the BBC from here. Or,
yep.
Or download, you know, from the Darknet.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things, and I've had friends, not me, but friends, who during the time that they didn't have BBC America, it wasn't on Sci-Fi, they would take trips to London and watch, you know, via Scottish
yeah,
BBC.
You just fly over in your TARDIS, you watch the show, and you come back.
It's fine. Okay. It's perfectly legal. Now, I don't encourage that, and the Playing Doctor podcast doesn't encourage it. But that's one of the things, though, is that if they take it off of Netflix, they take it off of Hulu, people are going to find it somewhere. Mm-hmm.
In the same way that you're saying, a lot of people find different ways. One thing that I think that I try to help, even if I'm not watching it, I make sure that my TV is going to switch back to that channel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just so these Nielsen or whoever is tracking, whoever, the cable company that is tracking views, so mm-hmm. that channel change to that. Even I have two TVs in the house, I have them automatically change to that channel, and okay, you can cut the price.
And we do what we can to keep it on. We're all fans. I want to say thank you for coming out. We've hit our time. I know. This was a lot of fun last year. We had a lot of fun this year. I want to thank everybody for coming out for us. This will be online in a few days, hopefully. Right?
Maybe.
Yeah. You can find us PlayingDoctorPodcast.com is our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Google Plus.
Yes. I keep forgetting about Google Plus.
It's still there. You can find us on iTunes if you just search for Playing Doctor Podcast.
Mm-hmm. And we're also on Stitcher, and the links to all these are on our website. And we also have a hotline number that you can find on our website and call us and tell us what you think about the new episode as soon as it comes out, and we might play it on the show and discuss your
thoughts. We've done that before.
Yes.
Now, I will warn you, though, the podcast may not always be family-friendly because some people like to use strong language.
I try to tone it down for the library.
You know,
out of respect.
Silence
for the
in
books.
The library. In the Boston Narada coming out and turning you into a chicken bone. All right. So thank you for joining us. And I guess we have
There's a raffle.
Raffle coming up next. So thank you.
Thank you.
Save.